Hello, this is Daryl Castle with today's podcast. Today is Friday, June 23rd, 2017, and on today's podcast, we will be talking about the crisis with North Korea from the perspective of whether or not that nation is a serious nuclear threat to the United States or whether it is just a place run by really bad people or perhaps really bad lunatics. North Korea is about the last place one would normally think of as a serious threat. It can't even feed its own people without massive help from China and from the West. It can't seem to make anything, such as appliances, air conditioners, cars, etc. Most of those things it imports from its Chinese benefactor as well as its sworn enemy, South Korea. North Korea keeps its people, those not confined at hard labor in concentration camps, that is, in a total media blackout. It has been run as a matter of inheritance by the same family of dictators for decades. The current one, Kim Jong-un, seems like the craziest one yet. He appears to be rather insecure and is constantly trying to convince the world that he is powerful and a man who leads a nation to be feared and respected. He acts a lot like a spoiled adolescent looking for attention. In April of this year, Kim held a big parade in his capital city of Pyongyang, in which he, in the grand style of the Soviet Union's old May Day parades, showed off a, quote, terrifying array of massive nuclear-capable missiles. The world wasn't fooled, however, and headlines around the world poke fun at him for his wooden missiles and missiles that can't fly. He keeps saying that all the missiles he keeps testing, most of which fail, are nuclear-capable, but there is no evidence that he has successfully mounted a nuclear warhead on a missile or that he even has nuclear warhead capability, for that matter. The United States is certainly treating North Korea as a serious and legitimate nuclear threat. The Trump administration seems to be wary of Kim's constant belligerence and threats to attack the United States and its allies. The attack carrier, USS Carl Vinson, and its entire battle group has been on station off North Korean waters for a couple of months now. And a second carrier battle group, the USS Ronald Reagan, has departed its home port of Yokosuka, Japan, for the short sail up to North Korea. Now the carrier, USS Nimitz, and its battle group have reportedly also sailed for North Korean waters, a total of three strike carriers, each with about 100 attack aircraft capable of hitting anywhere in North Korea, will soon be deployed off its coast. Keep in mind that when carriers are deployed somewhere, they are unavailable to be used elsewhere. With the George H.W. Bush in the Persian Gulf, that's four frontline carriers committed long-term. It's also very expensive to keep an entire battle group at sea. I can't confirm absolutely these figures, but I've read reports that say $25 million per day for each battle group. So if it's accurate, that's $100 million per day for the four groups combined. In addition, the United States has taken other action in what appears to be a coming and increasingly unavoidable war. Global intelligence expert and chairman of Geopolitical Futures, George Friedman, recently at a strategic investment conference lecture, said, quote, it has become apparent that the U.S. is preparing to attack North Korea. Mr. Friedman, who has long been a U.S. government advisor, went on to say that the B-52, B-2, and B-1 bombers based in Guam would be the axis of attack supported by over 100 fighter aircraft. Civil defense exercises and briefings are being conducted in Guam since it is a U.S. territory and has to be protected. Mr. Friedman says he doesn't think that North Korea has offensive capabilities of striking the United States mainland, but South Korea is an ally, and we have large numbers of troops there. Seoul is a metropolitan area of 25 million people. North Korea reportedly has 11,000 artillery pieces aimed at Seoul, so massive damage there would result. The U.S. strike would have to attack the nuclear facilities, but also the guns aimed at South Korea. Mr. Friedman says that the line of reasoning of the Trump administration is the same one as laid down by the Bush and Obama administrations, that a red line where North Korea has the nuclear capability of attacking its neighbors. At that point, we intervene. Mr. Friedman believes the timeline to be very short, and on Wednesday of this very week, the headlines in the United States newspapers reported that Mr. Trump said that China had tried to help but was unsuccessful, a very ominous sign. There is little doubt in this technology-flooded world, even a backward country like North Korea could acquire nuclear-capable weapons. Mr. Kim Jong-un could buy them from the Iranians or even the Chinese, but miniaturizing the weapons for mounting on an ICBM is a whole different technological leap. I wish I had time to go into the geopolitical aspects of this crisis, but on this podcast I have limited time, so I will just say it is an unknown what the Chinese and Russian reactions would be to a nuclear exchange on their borders. Both countries border North Korea. Both have sent large numbers of troops to their borders with North Korea. The situation has disintegrated to the point where it is difficult to see it being resolved peacefully without some concession coming from Mr. Kim Jong-un, and he doesn't seem so inclined. The recent matter of the student Otto Warmbier being imprisoned essentially for nothing and then being sent home to his parents, brain dead, is a complicating matter in any diplomacy. The sad thing about all this is that it doesn't make logical sense, and it appears to be unnecessary. What is the reasoning behind making what could be confined to a regional conflict into a global confrontation? This reminds me of the history of Europe in 1913 and 1914 when things were so volatile that the slightest spark could ignite a global fire. Finally, one did, and it ended the lives of 50 to 60 million people and destroyed a whole generation of young European men. If North Korea wanted to attack the United States, Japan, or South Korea with nuclear weapons, why would it choose a missile? The minute the missile launched, it would be tracked, possibly shot down, but if not, then it would invite instantaneous massive retaliation and would be suicide for Kim and for North Korea. Such an attack would be an invitation to national annihilation, so why do it? Why not put the device on a large container ship, such as the one that recently rammed the U.S. destroyer USS Fitzgerald? The ship has hundreds of containers, like the one you see every day on your railroad in your town. It could be sailed into Los Angeles, Seoul, Tokyo, or any other city and exploded there. It could also be offloaded, sent by rail anywhere in the United States, including Washington, D.C., then exploded by a cell phone or some other simple device. Should you wish faster delivery, why not put it on a commercial airliner and land it anywhere in the United States? If you could miniaturize it, FedEx could deliver it overnight and on time. The whole concept of ICBM delivered nuclear annihilation is now just a weapon to be used as a threat of retaliation in case anyone is crazy enough to launch such an attack. That is Cold War technology being used by Kim Jong-un to get his way and to shake up the real nations. The ship or airliner method would be almost impossible to determine the origin of, so retaliation would just be a guessing game. Finally, folks, to include this podcast for the sanity of the world, pray for a diplomatic solution to this mess. Most of all, I advise you to always have your affairs in order, spiritually and otherwise. When you leave your families in the morning, make sure your words say what you would want your last ones to say. At least that's the way I see it, folks. Until next time, this is Darrell Castle. Thanks for listening.